Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Nathaniel Gillis. Before I bring him on, I need to remind you that you can always get new regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. You're going to want to check us out on Rockfin. That's where you get all of our awesome premium content. You can get our regular shows and all the premium and regular shows from all the amazing content creators there on Rockfin. We've got our merch store up. Get yourself some t-shirts and stickers and bags, mugs, all kind of awesome stuff. That link's in the description. And finally, if you're reaching that gray hair stage in life, you're going to want to check out C60 Purple Power. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's helped me with inflammation, energy. I've been taking it for over a year. I feel amazing. You can even get C60 for your pets, have your pets feel amazing. Just click the link in the description, and you can get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Tonight, my guest is Nathaniel Gillis. He is a religious demonologist and author. After living in a haunted house, he spent 20 years researching what it was he encountered. He has sought to redefine the nature of haunting phenomena, ghosts, and high strangeness. He's often quoted for his concept of the demonic. The reason they are playing by different rules is because they are playing a different game. Nathaniel, welcome back. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very good, sir. Thank you for having me back on, man. I had such a good time the last time, and it's such an honor to be back on with you guys.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming back, and I've been looking forward to it. Tonight, we're going to be talking about, once again, your research on demons, what the devil may be, but we're going to go a little deeper tonight. We're going to talk about unclean spirits and a possible connection to implants found in people who have been possibly abducted by extraterrestrials, which is going to be pretty cool. Yep. It's been a while since you've been on, though. I'd like you to remind the audience a little bit more about yourself and your background and what got you interested in that, started down these crazy rabbit holes.
You know what? It has been a while. So I lived in a haunted house as a kid. I grew up in a haunted house. And as I was encountering this malevolent evil in the house, I was also attending a local church. One thing that I was really battling was the fact that I was dealing with entities, experiencing entities, seeing entities in that house that did not align with the religious dogmatism I grew up in. And so I was forced to either accept the fact that, hey, listen, the current construction of religious demonology doesn't fit the phenomenon, or, you know, maybe I was just crazy, which come to find out I wasn't. Thank God. However, my religion just fell apart in my hands. And so that's what really led me into believing that maybe demonology as a field of research has a little bit more expanding to do, a little bit growing out of dogma and growing into the data. And we'll get more into that tonight. But that's really what led me into this field. And so I began to question, you know, what are the origins of the belief of demons? Forget the grimoires. They don't really help anybody unless you're trying to conjure something, you know. And then still, if you do, what are you conjuring, right? So what had happened was I realized very quickly that we're dealing with a life form here. And so the question is, what kind of life form? What are their intentions with us? You know, that's really where I'm at.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Now, I'd love to hear a little bit about maybe some of the most profound instances that may have happened to you at that haunted house.
Yeah, so it really began as early as the open house. Like, my parents took me to this house and said, you know what, take a look around, you know, go into all the rooms, and we're going to go hang out and talk to the realtor. And so I was a kid, you know, I was like 8, 9 years old. I still say 8.5 in all of my interviews, because at that age, halves matter. You know, they do. Right. I was 8.5, you know. So I'm looking around in my room, my future room, my desk. Let's take a look around, figure out where you're going to put all of your stuff. And so I am. And I, for some reason, I was drawn to kneel down and look underneath the bed. Can't tell you why. Still to this day, I have no idea why I was called to do that. Anyways, I open up the blanket, pull the blanket up, and I'm looking sideways, face to face with a full-bodied apparition. She was beautiful. She was a little girl. She had black hair, She was pale. She had a white linen dress on that looked to have been made during the turn of the century. And when we met eye to eye, we both kind of recoiled. So I backed up, and she did too, and she shimmied her body to the wall, to where she was the furthest she could be from me. Come to find out, she didn't belong in the neighborhood. The family that actually owned the house, they were elderly, and they had died, and so it was just an estate sale. But that was the very first time I encountered this phenomenon of the supernatural, or what I have termed the future natural, because we don't know it's not natural yet. We don't have, right? You know what I'm saying? So when I moved into the house, that entity mutated and mutated into something that was more malevolent. It mutated into shadow figures. It would walk our wooden floors at nighttime to where I could hear its displaced weight. I would see there was one smoky apparition that would usually come at nighttime. It would weave itself through the corner of my door, a little crack, and then form itself into a cloud and just hover in the corner of the room. So those are my experiences. That was not when I encountered this phenomenon. It was when I was confronted by it. I ate dinner with it. I took a shower with it. I went to school with it. It was as if I literally had, you know, it was with me 24/7. And thankfully, somehow, I don't know, people say it's God. I want to say it's God. I did pray to God, and that entity laughed. But more than anything, this phenomenon has caused me to question things, not just the dogmatism I grew out of, but the things I'm growing into. What exactly are we dealing with? But to answer your question, that was my introduction to this. You know, I had no idea what this was.
Right.
What is this? You know, why do I have to have the responsibility of going through it? That's what I was thinking.
That's a hell of an introduction to it, man. And when it comes to the hidden reality, our hidden world that probably exists around us at all times, you know, beyond the spectrum of our vision, I'm sure there are plenty of different forms of life. And it seems like this is like an onion. There's plenty of different layers to the hidden reality. Correct. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Yeah, there are at least three dimensions, not... I think they're vertically. I don't think they're horizontally. I think we're dealing with this kind of thing. We notice that in the different rituals. I keep getting, man, I'm the most uncomfortable person I'll ever meet. So I'm always switching. So I hope your viewers don't hate on me for that. But yeah, I mean, if you go back into the ancient rituals of demonology and how consciousness was currency to them. Yeah. What used to happen is we would kill something to gain favor with that second dimension. Now we have entities that are killing us to have a favor in that third dimension. And so we're looking for that understanding. It's not just that we can, you know, it's not a horizontal thing. That's what I'm saying. And we're going to get more deep into that, man. I'm excited to be here, man.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Yeah. And so would you say in our ancient past, we probably had a much better standing of this hidden world and a much better understanding of how to interact with it? And over the years, of course, everything has changed. It seems that we've lost a lot of our ability to tap into that. But you just mentioned that now these entities are trying to feed on us in a way. How did this, you know, what's occurred here?
Well, I think the idea that demons are fallen angels is ancient. It's been demonized and it's been dogmatized. And I think a lot of the fact is, you know, a lot of these researchers, even ufologists, they look at my research as a demonologist and say, you know what, you're a dogmatist. And I say, well, don't lump me in the group of all these people who the only thing they do is go in and you know, cancel curses in the house. I do that too. I have done it. But my research is more expensive than that. And so even me and my publicists, like, we're trying to figure out where I fit in this, because my, you know, it's like, I'm not just a demonologist, but you know, whatever. But here's my point. My point is that a lot of researchers will point to the demonology field and say that, you guys don't really have anything to offer. And I would say this, that we were the individuals that monitored the very first experiencers. We were the ones that they called upon in the midnight hour when they're trying to figure out why my wife's possessed and pregnant with a spirit that assaulted her. We were the ones throughout history who were the first responders. Now, what's happening right now in the field is that a lot of people are scoffing. they're turning down their nose or whatever, they're frowning on us and turning up their nose at us, sneering at the field of demonology because they don't know enough about the field to understand that we were the ones who knocked on the doors at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, listen, what do you think you encountered? Well, I don't know. What happened? And then they begin to describe the 21st century version of an abduction. So what's happened is that there are researchers, treasure researchers, heroes of mine, that have literally calcified themselves in the static understanding of what they think is, you know, what demonology is. And I'll tell you what, man, what we need to do as a field is we need to go back to history. We need to destigmatize it, strip it from the dogma, look at the data, and then we'll realize that this phenomenon has been occurring for millennia. And we have to look at what they were experiencing. Not just, we can't just trap ourselves in the language of what we think they're saying. Because yesterday's flying shields are today's flying saucers. God forbid the next generation frowns on us and thinks we're peasantry, right? So we cannot be trapped in language. So we're experiencing the same thing. And I'll shut up.
No, that was very well said. And I think that pretty, you know, that's pretty accurate. Yeah. But something that's encouraging to me is, especially lately in the past couple of years, I've seen a lot of UFO researchers kind of coming together with some paranormal researchers and kind of comparing notes. And that's really encouraging because I think that's we need more of that. We need more of all these fields to come together.
Yes.
Paranormal consciousness, demonology, spirituality, all this stuff. And we need to kind of compare notes on everything. And I think we could learn a lot more and get a lot further in this and a lot better understanding of this if we do that, you know.
We need to, we must. Here's why, because the phenomenon is not limited to scientism. This phenomenon is not materialism. These are entities that can walk up to you and materialize and then walk through your front door, right? And what's interesting about this, again, it's not just that we have demonologists, but these entities are evolving according to our awareness of them, right? So watch this. This is very damning. I'm not one of them researchers that say this is all light and love. Quite the opposite. The data sample speaks of that. let me say this, man. So if we were to approach these experiencers and say, you know what did you really see? What did these entities make you feel? Well, number one, they can go in and out of existence, as my friend Carl Johnson says. They can go in and out of existence at will. Now, prior to the UFO abduction phenomenon, our ancestors and even our demonologists, experienced that as a haunting. Not as an abduction, right? And so now we have individuals out there who are trying to summon, being human Ouija boards, summon things that they do not what, when, where, or who they are. And they frown on demonology and say, what do you have to say? Well, I can tell you what I have to say, because I've had cases of Ouija boards where somebody opens up the door and says, hey, Ted, Uncle Ted, and then what, Ted Clancy comes in here, right? Or Ted, whatever, you know? That's the problem. What's happening now is that we have 3,000 years of demonology who have been working with experiencers, documented cases. We may now have them on our iPhones, but you know what? Dr. Carla Turner's work didn't have it. Betty and Barty and Luca didn't have them on iPhones. So what we have to do, we have to literally, as a field of researchers, we have to return back to our roots and say, strip it from the religious dogma. We need to look at the case studies throughout all of history. And I have. And it's damning and terrifying. I'm not lying. I'm not even just throwing that out there to be, you know, try to hide
you
everybody
know,
up.
Since you mentioned that, let's talk a little bit about that. Maybe you could cite a few, you know, examples.
Okay. First of all, let's go back into biblical antiquity. There was one individual in this show. Somebody said, you know what? This is all just religious dogma. Okay, fine. Does anybody realize that when we're reading the Bible, we are reading the culmination of Mesopotamian texts? We are. So biblical antiquity, they did not author these legends, right? They didn't come up with the exorcistic, right? They didn't come up with Genesis 6 in the Bible. Everything that we see in the Bible was a collection of memories. Scholars call it mythopoeic thought. Because long before we could retreat or retweet everybody, what we had to do as individuals without technology is we had to teach our children. This is what we experienced. This is what my dad experienced, right? And through mythopoeic poetry, of myths. That's how legend and folklore began to self-replicate. So if we go back into history, we see that in Genesis 6, even prior to that, in the Anunnaki texts, these entities were first perceived as deceased ancestors, ghosts. Right. Anunnaki, if you take that, the Hebrew culture transposed it into their religion, called them Anakim. They're found in Genesis. Right. So whenever somebody says, you know what, Nathan, you're just a religious demonologist. No, I'm not. We don't have a definition yet, but I can tell you this much. My research has concluded that our ancestors they've encountered them. Number one, you asked a question. These entities were incubi spirits. Now, what is an incubi spirit? Well, I'll tell you what. I study behavioral patterns. I'm not a fan of apparitions. Apparitions can lie, right? Now, what we do have is the nature, their honesty is it's very much there. It's like a profiler going in and looking at the bloody footprints of a serial killer. It's always going to manifest. It doesn't matter if they put on, masks or whatever. So my point is, if you go back into biblical antiquity, even before that, we have these entities that were manifest to women in the images of men. Is this okay? I know. I have ADHD, man.
I always take notes as I go. So yeah, you're good.
All right. Cool. So they first appeared to women in the form of a man. Now, throughout history, our demonologists thought those entities to be incubi spirits and incubus. Now, what I realized in my research was that this whole incubi phenomenon was not just limited to a lady going to bed, having a dream, and then, and during the dream, not realizing, okay, is this real? Is this going on? Like, is this a real thing? Or am I dreaming a really realistic dream? Whatever. They didn't know. They didn't know what was happening. But I'll tell you what did happen. The next day, our demonologists would go into their room and scoop up and collect semen samples. Now, that was the very first time in my research I went, oh my God. Here's why. Because I realized that the whole dream event, right, the whole inducing the female into a sleep state was a version, it was just basically to hoodwink them. If you get someone, they're called dream demons. But what was happening, Doc, is they were literally victimizing our women, and they were inducing them into this transit state and then causing them to have intercourse. Can I say that? You can delete that if not. I'm doing coast to coast here later, and I don't know what to say, whatever.
Nah, you're good.
But it was in a sleep state that these entities manifested in the image of a former lover or a husband. Now, I'm working with women all across the world who are experiencing the same phenomenon, but in their minds, they're not being abducted. Right?
Now,
what is happening?
Yeah. You said in their minds, they're not being abducted. What do they think
right.
is happening?
Okay, so in history, like I told you, these entities, they evolve according to our awareness of them, which is, like I said, terrifying. But in history, our ancestors, they view these entities as dream demons. Like I said, take off the dogma, forget demon, let's talk about dreams for a fleeting moment. Well, what would happen is you would have an individual who would go to bed at night, and these entities would arrive when they were asleep, and they would wait until their soul left their body. And then they would begin to manipulate the consciousness of the victim. Now, again, at that particular time, a demonologist would say, that's just a spiritual attack. Hail Mary, whatever, blah, 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 holy water. But that was not these entities' intention. Their intention was not just to attack our women. Their intention was to impregnate them. And what they were doing is they were manifesting according to the belief of these victims. Right. I have a woman that I've been working with. She's from India. She's about 36 years old. She has had 8 different partners in her life. She first got a hold of me because you guys know how many shows I've done it. So what happens is there are a lot of people that get a hold of me and they say, I don't have any advocacy. There's no research that's talking about this the way you are. So they reach out to me. She's had this entity, one incubi spirit that has manifested to her as all 8 lovers. Now, ancient demonology, we knew this was happening far before ufologists did. And we had to wrestle with the fact, did these entities, were they doing these acts because they were, you know, excited? Were they passionate? Were they lusting after our women? We in history had to ask these very profound philosophical questions. Now that the data sample is stretched itself through history long enough, we know for sure they're not attacking our women because they want, you know, they think they're all hot. They're using the trauma of our women to step back into our dimension. They're trying to self-replicate by impregnating our women. And then that is the entire UFO abduction phenomenon.
Okay, so now if we're going to, you know, this, I do think that this is all part of kind of like the same paranormal soup in a way.
Right.
I want to establish for people what demons are basically, and what the difference is between a demon, unclean spirit, and something else that may be not of this world, but may be able to interact with us. What are these entities, I guess, historically? And then we can go into how they kind of morphed into what could possibly be extraterrestrials today, you know?
Perfect. So what happened was, in the Levant, the cradle of civilization, there was a period of history where consciousness, disincarnate consciousness, began to interact with humanity. And during that time, we have our ancestors not understanding it. They didn't quite grasp it. A lot of times they were being haunted. You know, they would have somebody that would die in a house, and that individual's consciousness would stain it. And so we would have ancient references to haunted houses. And that even bled into Genesis when Yahweh says to Cain, he says, listen, your son, your brother, right? He said, your brother's blood cries out from the ground. Why? It's consciousness. And so what we have throughout history is we have a belief system that demonized consciousness. They began to call ghosts horns and hooves. They didn't understand it. They had no grasp of the afterlife. They didn't have the knowledge of we do today through mediumship to that degree. But even during that entire synopsis of history, we have manifestations of this phenomenon occurring. And abductions even. Abductions and succubi spirits, which is the female, you know, accosting a man and incubi. We have these manifestations occurring. And so what our ancestors did, to the best of their ability, they described the event, and then they applied agency to it. So I was afraid of this, therefore it must have been a demon, right? And so thankfully, in our history, we have texts that point us in the right direction. One of them is Numbers 19 and 11. That is not the origin of the exorcistic rite throughout history, but it is in the biblical text. But what that text is, and I know you'll find this interesting, it's where your Catholicism gets their holy water. This is the origin of the demon. It says that if anybody comes into contact with a corpse, they suffer corpse pollution. And then they said the cure is holy water. Not fallen angels, right? Consciousness. And then they have the open vessel law that says it's not just limited to people who come in contact with the corpse, that their spirit, the consciousness of that dead body, will fill that house. And so what they begin to do is they would go in and they would put lids on their pottery because they were afraid. You ready for this? It's mind blowing, man. They were afraid that their vessels of food would become possessed, would become full of that corpse pollution. And then that evolved into, guess what? A human being possessed and being commandeered, right? By that consciousness. And so then what's the next step? Well, now we have to perform that ritual, right? Holy water. So what is a demon? A demon is disincarnate consciousness. Right?
Right.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
It is very interesting, especially when you look at how consciousness is connected to everything I believe. And mm-hmm. even, you know, trees and grass and even inanimate objects, I believe, have a level of consciousness. So if you look at these things as disincarnate consciousness, it kind of makes sense when you look at possession. Well, it really makes sense when you look at possession, but also the way that this phenomenon has adapted to people's consciousness over history.
Yes.
And the phenomenon has changed.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, these, even UFOs, we have different types of UFOs now than people saw in the past.
Correct.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's very interesting.
It's quite concerning, because if they're evolving according to our awareness of them, then we fall into the category of asking, you know, are they doing this for our benefit or for theirs? Now, classically speaking, if we're going to look at the incubi phenomenon, which is their behavioral pattern, that's what they've been doing the entire time. That's, you know, it's not just their apparitions. They can appear to us as a gray, you know, as a manted. You know, all of these different manifestations, but at the end of the day, they're translucent, which is Chris Bledsoe tells us that. But here's what we have to look at. You know, again, are they doing this for our benefit or theirs? Well, that moves the entire argument to morality. Are they moral? And our ufologists are, you know, they're wrestling with these ancient questions. And I love it, because these entities, if anything, they're pushing the materialists into the corner of, hey, let's talk about religion for a second. It's like, dang it. Hey, when that happens. I'm not saying religion has all the answers, but hey, at least if all we have is all the questions, hey, man. You know, no. So here's what's happened. Okay, what is the morality? We cannot base whether or not they're a threat to us on their morality. Picture this. Let's talk about, let's talk about Jeffrey Dahmer and say, hey, listen, is Dahmer a threat? Well, we don't know. We don't know his morality. Doesn't matter. Right? He's victimizing people. Well, we don't know if he's doing it for our benefit. It doesn't matter. He's killing people. Right? And so what happens is we have a lot of non-thinkers who, and that's, crucified for that. But what's happening is we have individuals who, you know, they're trying to rationalize this phenomenon, and they're trying to punish religion for our thoughts. And listen, I'm a huge Hitchens fan. I'm a huge Linux fan. I've studied this all my life. But what they're doing to us is something wholly different. Wholly different. Betty Luca, her husband watched as her soul was peeled out of her body. Is that a threat?
Okay, now let me, since we're talking about this in this way, we've had different researchers talk about different ET races with different intentions.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are love and light, and they want to save the planet, and they're therefore humanity's benefit. Some of them are evil or reptilians, like you said, the Mantis beings, or, you know, these, and there's a galactic war going on, and they're fighting over humanity. So if we're looking at it in that way, are there... If we're looking at them as demons or spirits, just disincarnate entities, can they have different intentions towards humans? Can some be benevolent?
Can They can. And again, we're going to fall into a lot of older researchers. Dr. Carla Turner that got us. Dr. Carla Turner's work, she speaks of these entities based upon her interactions with abductees. One thing she says that she says that we know that most, if not all, or some, whatever, just say some, of these entities are constant liars. Now, what's fascinating about this is the only reason she didn't say all is because nobody can say there's no more other entities out there, right? We get to say, you know, love them all, right? That's the only reason why she didn't. It's not that the data sample didn't say that they're not liars, right? What the data sample says is they are. But what she was saying is, listen, I no one individual can say that there's no other entities out there, that all of them are liars. Now let's look at the data sample. Number one, every abduction, every abduction includes introducing us to a world that doesn't feel like we belong, in terms of like, this is our, this is where we are. And then we are abducted. And now we're supposed to understand it all. That's number one. Number two, we're going to fall into the category of healings. Where, you know, why are they healing us if they're such a big threat, right? Well, I'm tell you what, if you want to heal us, teach us how to heal. Don't just heal us and send us off like a sheep led to the slaughter as prophets. So what does that tell us? They're not trying to heal us for our benefit. They're healing us for theirs. Number one. Number two, when you have a sick, like cattle, that was Dr. Carla Turner's hypothesis. You know, they're treating us like cattle. I believe that. But, you know, just because we don't go out and kill all cattle doesn't mean we're not a threat. Just because we have a sick cow and we nurture it back to health doesn't mean we're not a threat. We'll go kill its cousin and heal him, right? And that's the breeder aspect of it. But when we're dealing with these researchers, we need to understand that these entities can create our memory. Not just manifest according to what we would believe they are. I mean, let's look at history. We have entities that would manifest as lovers. First of all, how did they know what our lovers looked like? Number one. Number two, we have virgins that are being manifested too. They've never had intercourse with a man. And yet these entities were manifested to them according to who someone they would have intercourse with. How did they know that? Right? That is the intellectual interface that they're manifesting as. And so they're not giving us our memories alone. They're giving some of their memories to us too. And so when we're dealing with the threat narrative, we need to realize that at any time they can pull our consciousness out of our bodies. Let's place it into context. If your neighbor took your 10-year-old out of its room at night, I don't even have to go on. Is that a threat? What if it came back with a good haircut? Right? This is how silly it is.
Yeah.
What if it came back with better credit? Like, let's say it took your 18-year-old kid out, right? They don't have good credit. I'm just whatever. And it comes back miraculously with better credit. Is it a threat? It is, because it did not ask your permission. And you don't even remember half the time what they did. I'll shut up, man. There's so much to talk about.
That's very interesting. And I think one of the most, I guess, prevalent historical events we can look at that really kind of depicts our aliens, demons, is the ritual with Aleister Crowley, where he, you know, was in the desert and supposedly this entity lamb appeared. Right. And the depiction he drew of this being looked like a gray alien.
Correct.
You can go back to that as like one of the earlier kind of comparisons to this occultism and ufology, you know?
Right. You're exactly right. Now here's the question of the hour. Are they approaching us first as demons and then literally letting us, because they never corrected us. They say, you know what? I'm not a demon. You know, never happened. Now, again, if we're that ignorant throughout history, they should have at least said, hey, listen, we have good intentions for you. You know, don't demonize us. We're doing our best to help you. They're not doing that. Even with Chris Bledsoe's case, they'll manifest and then let you believe what you want to believe.
Yeah, they seem to playing with people's consciousness in a lot of the cases that look at the case with Terry Lovelace. I like to look at this one where he's talking about how he's on the table. He cannot move. He's like being held down by some unseen force. And he sees this tall, terrifying looking being that is staring at him. And he feels like a dog to this being because he feels like he's picking him apart. He knows everything about him already. And he's sending messages psychically to let him know this. So, you know, when you look at things like that, it's like these entities, if they have intentions toward us, and you have to look at, they may be extremely advanced, you know, as far as IQ. What they may be involved with. So their, you know, view of morality may not even be something that we could comprehend, you know?
Yeah, but still, like I said, with Jeffrey Dahmer, they're still a threat. That's really where the crux of the argument is at this moment. But with respect to what they can do, I mean, oh my God. Oh my God, dude. We're talking about a species that can keep the body alive and pluck the soul out. Betty Luka was abducted. She's seeing her abduction. Her eyes are in the bed. She remembers the abduction. Her brain's in the bed. She's seeing and feeling everything. Her whole body's in bed. Now, her husband, Bob, watched her soul be peeled out. Now, here's an age-old question. Why is it that we have cases of people walking through walls during the abduction, right? Maybe I was asleep one night, or man, you know, I was pouring me a drink and watching Frasier one night. Next thing I know, my world stopped and I'm being pulled out of my body. Or some people don't remember it as that. They just think that their physical body is walking through a wall. I don't think that's happening at all. I think they're separating consciousness from the body. Now, here's why I say that, because this gets very deep. And oh my God, I was working with an individual whose father was a remote viewer. And his father would leave his body, he would come back into his body and give readings to famous politicians, celebrities in the city. One day, his father, when he got back into his body, he said his father stumbled down the stairs, white as a ghost, screaming, inconsolable, has a coronary, goes to the hospital. And he says, when they get to the hospital, they're opening, you know, they're taking his clothes off, helping him put his robe on and stuff. And they said, with our eyes, we see on his chest religious amulets just like simultaneously in real time just being carved into his chest. Now, I have pictures of it. They're not using amulets like we are. There were Egyptian hieroglyphs, there was the Star of David, and there was a cross. So forget demonology. We have no idea what they're doing. We go into houses with crosses. It's right, it's exclusive to our religious system. They're using their own systematic religion of amulets against us, and we're ignoring that too. My point is this. It did not manifest on his skin until his soul got back into his body. And Betty Luka's husband noticed, as his wife is laying in bed, that when her soul got back into her body began to manifest a skin condition. See where I'm going? It began to manifest scoot marks. Right? What are they doing? What's happening to the soul is manifesting on the skin. That's also why Ian Stevenson's work in the afterlife is so vital here, guys. We have individuals that were 5 or 6 years old who says, listen, I was killed. What happened to you? I was shot in the neck. They'd have a birthmark. Why? Because it affected their soul. And when their soul got back into their body, it manifested on the skin. Huh? It's very interesting, but we need to realize that these guys have an apocalyptic knowledge of us. Forget Jeffrey Dahmer. They torture the body. These entities almost are torturing the soul, to the point that they've literally told abductees, do you remember when you step in the room and you split into two? Dr. Carla Turner had an abductee who, when she was not cooperating, you know, because they're not a threat or anything. When she wasn't cooperating, they literally told her, if you don't do what we're going to tell you to do, we're going to kill you. And they pointed to her body. This is key. If you don't hear anything I'm saying before, if you say I'm too fat, if you say I have, you know, whatever, words out, I don't care. Y'all need to hear what I'm about to say. They told her, we will replace your body. And nobody in your family will know you're gone. Now, here's the question. Whose consciousness are they going to put in that body?
Okay, now this brings me to what kind of possible technology are we dealing with here? I mean, they obviously are using some kind of technology, whether it's, you know, something that we have absolutely no understanding of, or something that we may one day have an understanding of. I don't know, but you know, you were going to talk about the implants that people, you know, the physical.
Oh my God! Yeah,
implants that people have had. So let's start there.
Okay, so let me say this. Okay, so let me say this. As always, if these entities have given us anything throughout history, anything that's tangible that we can really sink our teeth in, it's the knowledge of the afterlife, right? Even now, the UFO abduction phenomenon, just exactly what I was talking about just a fleeting moment before, pull the soul out of the body. Well, that tells us our soul can exist without our body, right? So they're teaching us something, even if they don't want to. So going throughout history, if we realize that what happened was that we demonized consciousness, Then we have to look at our ancestors' burial rites. What are their funerary rituals? Well, I'll tell you what was happening. Our ancestors were taking like a deceased body, and they would say, you know what, my uncle dies. Then they would bury the body outside the house or sometimes under the house. Then they would make a material image of the body. And we would call them statues. And then the consciousness of that deceased ancestor would step into that metal material image, and it would merge its consciousness with the metal. They called it idolatry. Now, just like I said, they evolved just like we have. Now, throughout history, then what they began to do is say, you know what? We can merge our consciousness with metal pretty good, pretty good. And then they stopped possessing statues. Then they started possessing humans. Uh-oh. Matter of fact, they started possessing dead people. There's what's in history is called the teraphim. That it was when a necromancer, which I believe these entities are, and I can prove that in a little bit. I don't know if we have enough time. I know I've been rambling for a while.
Are you good?
What would happen is that these necromancers would go and dig up a recently deceased person. These are your first vampires, by the way. And then they would take the body, put it in their wall. They would take a small piece of metal. Hello, implant. They would carve the name of an unclean spirit on that metal and place it inside that cadaver's body. And the consciousness of that demon would then merge itself with that implant and possess that body. That is the introduction. Again, this is all about the afterlife. And I think that it's quite evident. But that is the implant nature. It's not just them monitoring us through our eyes. It's very interesting. Matter of fact, I have a book here in my library. It's Beyond UFOs. And one case study is talking about a 10-year-old who's getting ready for bed. And he says, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he begins seeing through someone else's eyes. As the ship is approaching his house from the west, he's seeing them in his eyes approach the house. Now, if he's seeing through their eyes, who's seeing through his? Right? Again, he had an implant. Again, what we need to be looking at is this. We're not using Google Maps here. They're turning on our unified field of consciousness, unified stream of consciousness, and saying, oh, not where he is. That's where I am now. And that is truly terrifying because we have no idea what kind of technology that is.
Man, this is really interesting. And, you know, I've known consciousness is just key to everything.
Yeah.
So this makes it very compelling. What are your thoughts on some of the cases where people have met hybrid children or have had DNA samples taken, sperm, eggs, things of this nature?
Okay. So that goes back into ancient demonology. You know, what was the incubus doing? You know, why was he trying to impregnate our women? What was the whole purpose of that? So here's what I think has been happening. I do not think that the hybrid phenomenon is limited to the missing fetus syndrome. I do believe it's also stretching, according to my research, is stretching itself into babies that have died in the womb. Oh God, I know this is dark, but we got to go. I just did a week long vacation because of how dark my research got. I had a lady that called me, or she emailed me rather, and said, listen, she said, you know, all of my life, I have been encountering this entity that has long fingers that would stretch itself through my door and pull, you know, just weird stuff. She said that it came to me in a dream one day and told me that all of its children, all of my children, will be his. It belongs to him. So these specific individuals are people who maybe they're having marriage problems. Maybe they've held their virginity until marriage or whatever, but they're still getting pregnant. This is a very big issue here, very big issue. And they're not just being pregnant in terms of, okay, it's a missing fetus syndrome. Now we have missing consciousness syndrome where the baby dies and they're being told by the entity, that baby belongs to me. I told you it belonged to me before you were pregnant. Now that's my work. Let's go to Dr. Carla Turner's work. This is very deep, man. God, I hope people don't cancel me because of how dark my work is. But the research has to be told. Dr. Carla Turner had an individual. Yeah. This is in the book Taken. Where she was abducted. She was not having intercourse with her husband at the time, but she was abducted. And Jesus, again, they're conforming to beliefs. Oh, Jesus comes to her, holds his hands out, and says, you know, all seed belongs to me. That's pretty bad. She didn't understand what it meant. And during this hypnosis session, she's crying to Dr. Colin Turner saying, I don't understand what's going on, you know, blah, 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 what's going on. She said after that abduction, 2 months later, she's pregnant. Now, what's fascinating about this is she said, Dr. Carla, when I was pregnant, I knew the baby was going to die. Question, who told her that? Right?
Right.
right. So the baby does die. She's a miscarriage. She's abducted again because you asked about the hybrid. And during that abduction, Jesus comes back to her, hands her a hybrid baby with the consciousness of her miscarried baby in it.
Wow.
Again, we are missing something. Man, I'm getting passionate. Oh, God. We're missing something here because we don't yet know if they're impregnating people to kill the baby and harvest the consciousness or if they're just harvesting the body itself. I would suggest to you, again, right, I would suggest to you that these entities are not just harvesting. Oh, they're harvesting semen. Why? To make babies. They're harvesting ova. Why? To make babies. I always, for a period of my life, my research, I thought, man, they're just taking babies to take the shell, the body. I don't believe that's the case at all. I think that, again, I think they're harvesting consciousness, which would make sense. They're soul hunters. Oh.
Yeah, that would unfortunately make sense. Man, we have to get into the relationship between possible humans and these entities. I'm not just talking about any human. I'm talking about high level humans, maybe in government, you know, elite factions, corporations, just people in high levels that dabble in the occult that may have relationships with these beings. Do you think that that is going on in high levels? And do you think that it substantially affects our nature of reality?
I think it does, and there's one person that stands out in my mind, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I promise you I'm not, but Jeffrey Epstein is one that I'm absolutely paying attention to right now. Here's why, because remember how you mentioned Aleister Crowley? Well, Crowley was a Kabbalist. All of his research was based on Kabbalism, which not really Kabbalism, but Kabbalah. You know, Eliphas Levi is one of his, like, they were you know, whatever, they're intertwined, basically, in their stuff. But Crowley would use Kabbalistic texts and rituals to conjure angels. He was big into sex magic. And so we don't know, again, sex magic, think about it, right? Sex magic, where you perform sexual rites, sexual rituals and exercises for what? For the purposes of influencing something other than, which I think they're doing too in these the abduction things too. But so getting back to Epstein, when they invaded his island, they found that he had a ritual altar and a bath. And he, this is very interesting because what he was performing, I know this because I study Kabbalah. I study this stuff. So just, they were performing rituals. That's why he was taking young women. Now, we have no idea how many pregnancies they've harvested from these young women. All we do know is that what? An incubi spirit, if there ever was one in the flesh, right? It's Epstein. I'll take you far away to an island, maybe even drug it. We don't know, you know, and then have it. Now, I think, again, if we're going to see a pattern of leaders, world leaders involved with these entities are only after one thing, self-replicating their species and using our belief systems against us. You want me to be Jesus? I'll be Jesus. Right? You want to be your husband? I'll be your husband. Matter of fact, Dr. Carla Turner had an individual, Ted Rice, who was abducted along with his grandmother. And for some reason, they know people. Oh, watch this. I've had women that contacted me. And they said, this is how I know, okay? This is how I know they're not doing these things, these rituals, just for pleasure. They said that these spirits stopped visiting them once they had a hysterectomy.
Wow.
One lady in particular said that these entities did not know. They didn't know that she had a hysterectomy prior to them visiting. And then when they started doing what they usually did during the dream, They look right at her and begin to verbally abuse her. Now, these are religious people. They would consider that a demon. But what, you know, what are they really after? I'm telling you, it's self-replicating. I think that throughout history, if they have, I think what they've been doing is they've been killing babies and placing consciousness in them. And that is the hybridization program. It's not the David, and I love David Jacobs. It's not just, okay, I'm going to merge DNA. No, I'll tell you, I'll give you an easier way. If we had that kind of technology, why not just kill somebody and then step into their body? We would call that possession. They would call that pregnancy.
That's interesting. And man, I know you said you're not, you know, big into conspiracy, but last year, a lot of conspiracy became reality. And there's a lot of high level people on that Epstein log that has been to that island.
Oh God. Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that I think people need to take a look at too. There's a lot of people probably involved in this, you know,
a lot of compromise. Yeah. Which I'm a big fan of researching Epstein's origin. I mean, Ghislaine Maxwell, Robert Maxwell, if you go to Robert Maxwell's history, it very much does sound like Maxwell, before he died, gave all of his money to Epstein. And what happened was Maxwell had a secretary that was every bit as close to Maxwell as Ghislaine was to Epstein. It's creepy. It is creepy. But I do believe that he plays a role in this. But what we have to realize, guys, is when we're dealing with people like Epstein, Aleister Crowley, we're dealing with people who are knowledgeable about rules we don't know exist. They're pulling on levels and manipulating things and opening doors we didn't know were there.
Yeah, that is very.
Does that make sense? And so it's very troubling.
It is. You know what else is troubling to me is the UFO disclosure in the news, in the mainstream, coming out from the government, coming out from the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, first of all, how much do they know? Because I know for a fact that we have reverse engineered craft. I've spoken to some high-level individuals, and that's, you know, pretty much undeniable now. So what is our relationship with these beings at these high levels if we can get reverse engineered craft? And why are they disclosing UFOs and ETs now at this point in time with all this other craziness going on? It's just, it's very odd to me. And of course, I don't trust it at all. I was wondering what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I think one, there's a researcher out there that nobody's paying attention to this individual. He was mainstream due to his work with cattle mutilations. He was the very first researcher on site at the Skinwalker Ranch. His name is Chris O'Brien.
Right.
Chris O'Brien worked with Ray Sanford. Ray Sanford is, in my view, he's the most knowledgeable in terms of witnessing these things. He has them on camera. I haven't seen the videos yet. I do have my brother seen it. My brother made a website for them. He's seen it. And so these guys, they created a web of cameras in the Uintah Basin. And some of their footage is better than, I mean, I've seen a couple of videos. It's better than what is it, TTSA? All them, you know, the other groups. Now, one thing we have to know for sure is that I don't think our government has any idea what they are. Now, Steve Mara, which is a hero of mine, Steve Mara told me that these entities, according to the United Kingdom government, the British government, they're demons. Now, it's not because that, you know, again, let's say this. We have ufologists that, you know, frown on that and say, well, you know what? These people in our own government say they're demons, and they may not know what we know. I think that's very arrogant, very arrogant. And that's going to assume that these upper level people, you know, are biblically literate. What if they're not? And what if they still think they're demons, right? What if they're not approaching this as, okay, we're dogmatists, and they're saying, holy smokes, we don't know what this is. Steve Mara believes that. Steve Mara has worked in the ghost field, paranormal field, for his whole life. And even he told me, he said, look, he said, their technology, if we could call it that, is wholly other. It's completely foreign to us. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing more alien to the human race than the afterlife, period.
That's
where I stand on the disclosure.
Well said. Yeah. I mean, that's very well said. We live in fascinating times with that, with everything going on right now. Now I do want to talk about the big demon, the devil. But there's so many. They got Satan, devil, Beelzebub. I mean, throughout history, this has changed, and I think that even now, people have no idea what the devil is, what Satan is. So in your research, what are the differences, and are these the same being? Could they be, or is it just completely different?
Okay, I think that what we have been calling a devil has devils. We need to realize that they're a species. Now, if they're a species that's self-replicated, then it has to be the first, right? That's just logic. But if we go back to biblical text, the scripture in the Old Testament talking about Lucifer. It's the same language that's being used talking about Lucifer as being used about the kings, one of the Babylonian king. So I do not believe Lucifer was an actual being that fell. I think that I have Hebrew scholars that I talk to all the time. I grew up in Hebrew theology, and so that's just common knowledge throughout your rabbinical texts. Now, speaking of Satan or Hasatan in Hebrew theology, he's a species. People are going to say, oh, well, what about Job? Okay, what about Psalms 109 and 6? Psalms 109 and 6 is a possession text, which also is about disincarnate spirits possessing a man. And David says, place a Satan at his side. And so what happened throughout history is we would look at Satan, and the translation was adversary, something that works against you. It was a being, but he wasn't the only being. And so, you know what I mean? So again, there's a multiplicity of these. It's a species, to answer your question. But again, I do believe that just like with that species of Satan, with the text of Lucifer, what were they doing? They were demonizing consciousness. What was Lucifer supposed to be? A fallen angel. Well, how do angels fall? No, if you fell, you're not an angel. And if you didn't fall. Right? So what are they trying to say? What happened is, if you go back into the fertile soil of the Levant, Mesopotamia, we see that the Hebrew word malakim meant ghost prior to becoming angel or messenger in the Hebrew culture. Hence why in the New Testament, when Peter's family thought Peter had died, they thought his apparitions knocked on the door. They said, well, that must be Peter's angel. Huh. What was it? That's not an angel. No, what they were trying to say is this, that must be Peter's ghost. This is why we have a connection. When Paul would be like, there were people that would bow down to Paul, and Paul would use a common phrase. It's a thematic element you witness all throughout the New Testament. Paul would say, do not bow down to me, stand up, for I am too a servant. I am a man like you. That's why John the Revelator, when he's on Patmos, boom. I'm getting excited, man. This is my origin, man. You asked me some deep questions. And the angel, and he bowed down to the angel. And the revel, and looking at the angel, and the angel says, stand up. Why? Because I too am a fellow servant. I too am a man. Right? Again, we're dealing with disincarnate entities here.
Okay, so let's get your take on Angel. We got to go the other direction now. What do you think is, are these directly from source or God creations? And are they benevolent? What are your thoughts on angels?
Angels. Well, I mean, anybody could be a messenger, right? Anybody could be a messenger of a good thing. So what happened throughout history is we would have a messenger come to us. They would tell us a good thing. Matter of fact, it could have been an apparition of my dear Aunt Edna. They would consider that an angel, right? And that angel gave me good news. Therefore, it's a good angel. It's definitely not fallen. If it was fallen, it would say something I didn't like, or it made me feel afraid or something. But again, I do believe that angels are deceased human beings. Absolutely, right. That's why if you go into the book of Enoch, Enoch became Metatron in the Kabbalistic texts. Enoch was immortal, right? But when he died, he evolved into this. Now, I did a show the other day, and they asked me what the difference is between a good man that dies and a bad man that dies. Well, good people evolve, bad people mutate. And at first blush, we would think, okay, Nathan's saying the same thing. I'm not. Right? We're dealing with mutated evil people here. And that's my little two-bit spiel, bro.
No, that's very interesting. You know, if once we're ready to move on from this existence, once we die, if we've led the right life, we can evolve and move on to something better. That would actually be pretty cool, pretty amazing. But man, Nathaniel, there has been so much interesting stuff that we talked about tonight. We're going to have you back on and go even deeper. Now, before you head out, tell us a little bit about your books and where we can find them and website and all that, all kind of stuff, all that good stuff.
For sure, man. So about 2 years ago, I lost a good, probably about 3 years ago now, I lost a good friend to drug addiction. He was an empath. And so I wrote my very first book, A Moment Called Man, in his honor, and it's designed for empaths who are medicating the gift they're called to manifest, which is what he was doing. And it's because of that, he lost his life to it. And so I wrote A Moment Called Man to help people realize that they're called to do something. And when people are called to do something, forget if you believe it's the universe or God, it doesn't matter. If you're not doing what you're called to do, you'll hurt in hidden places. And so I wrote that book to help people realize they're called and help them heal. My second book is my very first work on the paranormal. It's called The Skin That Crawls. And because of COVID, it was delayed. And then I sent it out and it was still delayed because of my publisher. And I won't even get into it. So yeah, I have the copy now and I'm going through it, man. I'm looking, I'm like, dude, this isn't misspelled. It's just so, yeah, The Skin That Crawls. So The Skin That Crawls is going to encapsulate everything we're talking about tonight. It's going to tie up one chapter in that book called Born of Belief, and how that many, many abductions were attempted by two different manifestations. Number one, do I really believe this entity is what it looks like? And usually it's not just, I look like this. It's an invitation to believe in the role. That's why when I work with that lady in India, you know, she was being approached by lovers. Why? Because it's looking. Do you believe I am who I say I am? Yes, I do. Well, now you've given me a role to step into. And now that I know you had intercourse with me prior, or that image prior, I can increase the probability of me impregnating you. That is what the crux of The Skin That Crawls is about. Now, when I'm done with that, I want to make it into a movie. So, I'm on my website's njgillis.com. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, the Nathaniel Gillis. And man, it's just been an honor to be back with you. I mean, I have been looking forward to this for a while, and
awesome.
You know, I hope I did better than great, last time, man.
We got deep. We got deep. We got to go deeper next time.
Heck yeah.
So looking forward to
it. For sure. Absolutely, brother. Thank you for having me.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming on. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We're going to see you again tomorrow.